America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Looky here, a minute past the hour, and we are at the close of the week, and the close of the month of January, I might add. It is the 31st day of January, 2014. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you'll find the chat room, which we'll be getting our usual complement of hornies, as Scott in Sweden likes to call us. Who will add to the general the general ambiance of the program with an ongoing discussion there. And if you've never been there, jump right in, please. It's free, it's easy, and it's a heck of a lot of fun. At HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you will also find a Listen Live button where you can go and pick up the stream if you're at a desktop PC or a laptop or such. But if you should happen to be out and about, don't forget, as has been proven to us by a number of members of the Horn Family Commune, you can take the horn with you and listen to it in your car. Listen to it while hiking, biking, sailing, who knows what. There's all kinds of potential fun out there. We recommend for mobile devices, for things like tablets and smartphones, we recommend TuneIn Radio and Stitcher Internet Radio, neither of which pays us to say that. It just happens to work very well. So also, of course, at the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com website, you will find the PayPal button. And it is through your determination that this program continues. Plain and simple. No corporate sponsorship. We're not in the market of selling $265 an hour Skype exorcisms, although, you know, anybody needs exercising. Touch your toes, jumping jacks, whatever. Tonight, in order to finish the month of January okay, which, of course, is the first month of the new year, 2014, we need to raise $280. That's 28 folks, 10 bucks a piece, 14 folks, 20 bucks a piece, two people at 140 a piece, one at 280, four at 70. You get the drill. You know how it works out. I really can do this sometimes when I think about it, do all that gazinta and ciphering and so forth. Yeah. So there's that. Other than that, it's been a lovely day here in Appalachistan. Gray as can be for the, some sun, but toward the end of the day it got gray, cloud cover, whatnot. But it has been, it was cloud cover that was running about, oh my goodness gracious, what? We got up near 50 degrees today. It felt like swimsuit weather. Surf's up, dude! And, you know, go grab the board shorts. It was a lovely day, and tomorrow promises to be pretty nice as well. I'm going to have a little fun tomorrow. I think Dr. Bill and Boss Man Wayne and Ferg and I are going to get together for a little breakfast buffet over in Beckley. I'm told it's a dandy, fresh-made biscuits by people who know what they're doing when it comes to making biscuits. Good gravy, and yeah, looking forward to it. Now, what else is it? Well, it being the end of the week, it's also Friday on the front porch. Yes. Friday on the front porch, when we sort of get together to round out the week with a round table discussion among all and sundry who wish to join in. The way Friday on the front porch works is we actually have six phone lines here. but only four of them can be on the air at one time via the incredibly complex and aging telephone interface device that we have here. So to get into any one of those four lines, 304-658-3333 is the number. And, of course, the Skype side of it is comprised of the Horn Molloy Skype chat group, which is capably and ably moderated for lo these many years by our good friend Sparky, who is also a moderator in the Horn chat room. We'll get that all going in fairly short order after at least a modest filibuster. Sound good? I like it. Sounds like a lot of fun indeed. Now, where to begin with this evening's Friday on the Front Porch? Just a few possibilities. There will be some, because if I don't, who will? There will be some mention of the ongoing water disaster here in the forgotten sacrifice zone of Appalachistan. There was more information today. Yeah. Apparently they're finally getting around to doing some testing of various areas, buildings, facilities that may have been impacted by the disaster caused by the company that provided chemicals for use in the coal processing preparation industry. You know, the same stuff that's been, at least in part, getting dumped into groundwater and hidden behind sludge dams for lo these many years. Mackenzie Mays and David Gutman have the story in the Charleston Gazette. In a story today, they wrote, detectable amounts of the coal cleaning chemical crude MCHM from the spill into the Elk River earlier this month have been found in three Kanawha County schools, as well as one school each in Lincoln and Putnam counties. Lincoln and Putnam counties were, of course, two of the other affected counties. There were nine altogether. George Washington High School, John Adams Middle School, and Andrew Heights Elementary School's water systems will be flushed again this weekend. Well, good luck with that, because it ain't gonna work, according to the Kanawha County school officials. Detectable levels of the chemical were also found in Buffalo High School and Lincoln County High School. Now, they want you to know, the detected levels are all well below the one part per million level of crude MCHM that the Centers for Disease Control has said is safe for everyone but pregnant women, but above the state's non-detect level of 10 parts per billion. One part per million equals 1,000 parts per billion. Now, the Kanawha County schools are still providing bottled water to the students and using bottled water in food preparation. Water fountains are covered with bags, and the hand sanitizer is present in all bathrooms. Oh, goody. Now, wait. What does that mean, bottled water is used in food preparation? Anybody ever worked in an institutional kitchen? Just asking questions here. Let's say you want to make a big old 5-gallon vat of Kool-Aid. Okay, well, Kool-Aid and sugar and 5 gallons of water, bottled water, no problem, got that. What happens when you need to wash the vat? Does the cleansing of pots and pans also, is that also included in what is described as the food preparation process? No answers here. And I don't profess to have any. Testing was done, and as of 3 p.m. today, no result was available for 24 of the 107 schools listed. The The rest of the schools showed a non-detect level below 10 parts per billion in the water. That is not to say that it is the same thing as having that non-detect level in, say, a water heater or in water lines. For those of you who are not particularly familiar with West Virginia and with the Charleston area, I will tell you that George Washington High School, one of the schools where the poison was still found in the water, yeah, driving down the road a little bit ago, and I heard another radio news item in which the report was given that, and it was described as, when a chemical leaked at Freedom Industries into the Elk River and contaminated the drinking water. Contaminated. Oh, yes. It was just contaminated. It wasn't poisoned. I don't understand why the for-profit media run as fast as their little profit-driven legs can carry them away from the word poisoned. George Ollenbacher is principal at George Washington High School. He said he was just told that it was a higher level and that they're just going to reflush and retest. And then this. No, what was I saying about George Washington High School? It serves one of the, if not the, wealthiest area of Charleston, West Virginia. You can well imagine that the parents are none too happy. Principal Ollenbacher said, "We're going to keep using bottled water until we get the all clear from the central office, but I don't see that being any time in the near future." That's kind of a broad statement, isn't it, that any time in the near future? John Adams Middle School is also in the South Hills area of Charleston, one of the wealthier areas of the town. Buffalo High School is in Putnam County, and it's canceling its extracurricular activities this weekend. And they're going to try for the third time to flush the pipes at Buffalo High School. And they're going to flush again at Lincoln County High School. Steve Priestley, president of the Lincoln County School Board, said, "We're not going to use the water until we know it's absolutely safe." Meanwhile, West Virginia American Water Company, motto, profit first, is sending out tanker trucks full of water to watering stations around the various affected counties. Of course, the question remains open as to where they're getting the water from. Because if they're sending in tanker trucks that have... Oh, dear. You get the idea, right? And poor old, good old Earl Ray Tomlin, governor of the coal industry of West Virginia, and is still scrambling to salvage something of whatever he had in the way of a reputation, well. And then there was, this. And the headline itself is kind of disconcerting, but then again, there's not just a hell of a lot about this whole disaster that isn't disconcerting. DEP official, no MCHM reached river in second Freedom incident. Ha! Second Freedom incident? Yes, second Freedom incident. Furniture legs are getting a real workout around here. Ken Ward, who, I repeat, deserves a Pulitzer for this coverage, writes today, "Contractors at the Freedom Industries tank farm along the Elk River hit an underground pipe Thursday night, releasing more crude MCHM and with it more of the strong black licorice odor into the surrounding air. Because we want to make sure that no one's confused and thinks that it's that Switzer's strawberry licorice, mind you. Yeah. They ruptured a pipe full of MCHM. But not to worry. Mike Dorsey was there to calm public fears. He's the Director of Emergency Response and Homeland... Wait, let's do this right. Homeland Security! For the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection, which is just laughable on its face. You see, if you've got a Department of Emergency Response and Homeland Security inside the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection, you could pretty well board up the windows, close the doors, deadbolt them, dog them, because it's pretty much worthless, because this is, after all, a state that has no Homeland Security. How much Homeland Security do you have if you live downstream from a leaking earthen dam that's holding back 9 billion gallons of toxic waste, and when it breaks, will send a somewhere between 40 and 100 feet tall wall of toxic waste about 100 miles down the course of the Coal River until it spills into the into the Kanawha River somewhere around St. Albans? How much security do you have, especially if you know that there's two or three other dams that are, okay, more than two or three, that could do the very same damn thing? Homeland Security, my left hind foot. But anyway, the risible Mike Dorsey said, it wasn't so much of an incident. None of the stuff got into the river. And see, there we are, running away from the real English language again. None of the poison got into the river. Whatever MCHM was released, Dorsey said, was, well, it stayed in a cutoff trench that crews had dug to block any contaminated, poisoned stuff from the site from getting into the river. That's a cutoff trench. Again, no particular information forthcoming here as to whether the cutoff trench was just a trench cut into the ground, or if it was lined with concrete or aluminum foil or, I don't know, lead or glass. But anyway, none of it got in the river. Some might have got in the dirt, but that's not in the article, and we're not going to talk about that so much, okay? Would that be all right, Bob, if we don't talk so much about it getting into the dirt? Yeah, let's not. According to Dorsey, the incident occurred when cleanup crews from Diversified Services, a contractor for Freedom Industries. Oh, God, please make it. Why? Why is Freedom Industries even delivering donuts to anybody associated with this cleanup? Well, we got to justify that $4 million we got in the damn bankruptcy somehow, Bob. God damn. I mean, granted, we're going to squirrel most of it away and maybe take a nice vacation somewhere down in the islands where we ain't poisoned their water yet. But, I mean, we got to look like we're spending some of it. Cut us a break. Now, anyway, once the screaming subsides, according to Dorsey, the incident occurred when cleanup crews from Diversified Services, a contractor for Freedom Industries, were using an excavator to enlarge the cutoff trench. Yes, yes, they were putting the cutoff trench in where they didn't know there was a pipeline running with a whole bunch of this poisonous shit. Dorsey said they hit an underground pipe they didn't know was there. You know what? We got signs all around the country. Or, well, okay, at least around the state, where and it gives a phone number and it says, call before you dig. And I think it's called misutility in this state. And they're supposed to have a map of every kind of pipe that's carrying natural gas or whatnot around. Right, because you don't want guys on excavators from Diversified Services, a subsidiary of Acme Industries, contractor for Freedom Industries, you don't want them just digging into a pipeline. But apparently they didn't call before they dug. And if they'd called, whoever answered the phone would have had to rely on the Nijinskys from Freedom Industry. Y'all got a pipeline over there? Hell, we don't know. We're only in it for the damn money. Jeez. And then this from Mike Dorsey, laughably head of emergency response and homeland security for the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection. I just can't get over the fact that there is one. It's not exactly clear what the pipe was for, and apparently it isn't marked on plans of the site. It's kind of like a lot of the piping up there, Dorsey said. It's got some groundwater in it. We don't know where it's coming from. But hail. The amount of methylchlorohexane methanol that got loose, that was just a trickle. Gee, Mr. Dorsey, what do you characterize to be a trickle? Well, it was tens of gallons. That's a quote. That's not Bob just playing around, fooling around, carrying on. It was tens of gallons, which means it could have been, okay, tens of, so it means it wasn't just 10 gallons. And tens means more than, okay, so it was anywhere from 20 to 99 gallons, I guess we can say, because it was tens of gallons. Hint, reminder, apparently the concentration used in the coal preparation process is 1 quart of this stuff to 1,000 gallons of water. Anybody feeling good about this story? Anybody feeling like the boys from DEP Homeland Security were right there on the job? No, me neither. It was tens of gallons, not hundreds or thousands of gallons. See? We're getting better at this. Help, 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 help. Still, the leak produced the now familiar odor, leading to at least 4 complaints from nearby residents. So, the gang that said that they weren't really sure if the leak began on January the 9th or not, and really hasn't completely gotten a handle on exactly how much of the shit was spilled into the river, now is happy to say, well, at least it wasn't thousands of gallons, it's just tens. And they're still complaining about the smell. Complaints. Complaints. Notice that? The leak produced the now familiar odor, leading to at least 4 complaints from nearby residents. Complaints. What are you complaining about? That's the smell of job creation. That's the smell of money. That's the smell of our ability to make political contributions to bold and brilliant leaders like Earl Ray Tomlin. Hoo-wee! We're getting her done here now. We're down to leaking tens of gallons when we inadvertently have contractors for the people who caused the problem in the first place busting open pipes with excavators because they didn't know where the pipes were because nobody knows where the pipes were. And well, we're getting better at it. Oh, jeebus. Is it really? Is it just me? Or is this still a pretty damn big deal? Because it feels like it's still a pretty damn big deal. We're 2 weeks out from the safe to drink order, and the stuff has been theoretically flushed and flushed and flushed and flushed, and they still detect it in the school system. Gee. I wonder if there's been any reporting from the hospitals. Wouldn't you love to be in there? Wouldn't you love for one of your loved ones to be having their their appendix out or something like that? And you know, sometimes you got to irrigate in there, or maybe you're just getting a root canal over to the dentist, and he takes the little squirty thing to irrigate there. You know, wash away some of the blood and carrying on and whatnot. Have they tested any of that stuff yet? Because I didn't see that they had. And if they have, and schools are at the lower end of the spectrum for, well, that's a little disturbing too, isn't it? Lord God, Billy Bob. Jack in Shreveport with an observation. Subject line, bottled water, cafeterias. Jack says, I would guess, and it's just a guess, that in situations like washing school cafeteria pots and pans, where one could use soap, might end up being better off than situations like hot water heaters and pipes, where putting detergents into the mix could do some harm. So maybe there's a difference in where you can use soap and where you shouldn't, like the hot water heater situation that you played the clip of when the guy said the chemical would just keep sticking inside the water heater. Just a thought to throw into the mix. I haven't read anything about the particular chemical in soap. Yeah, there's probably not just a hell of a lot of information out there about the chemical and soap. But there's this. The reason I asked about institutional kitchens is because institutional kitchens often have institutional sterilizers. You know, big-ass dishwashers that get really, really hot. Are they being used? Because if they are, how can you, and the flushing didn't work. Do you see the point? Do you see my, and I'm not just trying to be a gadfly here. I actually believe that people deserve to have every last iota of available information regarding this business. Because it may, 5-10 years down the road, wind up being a matter of life and death. Mommy, what's this leukemia the doctor says I have? We don't know, honey. Sometimes it's just God's will. Question coming from News Ninja Gene. Quick and probably stupid water question. No, it may be quick, but it isn't stupid. Are West Virginians allowed to collect rainwater? Yes, we are. We are not like the far west where somebody will come up and blow your brains out for collecting rainwater. Or try to pass a bill, you know, making it illegal. I mean, that's happened, hasn't it? But yes, we can collect rainwater, but anybody in this state who collects rainwater probably needs their head examined. Because it's got all kinds of poison in it. Because the air and the skies themselves are poisoned here in the sacrifice zone. Yes, they really are. I mean, once upon a time, this house was quite sustainable in its better days. It had an above ground and an underground cistern so that there was actually a gravity feed effect, and every gutter ran into the cistern for collection purposes. Even through drought, there was never a time here when there wasn't enough water to, well, I mean, but we didn't use, no, my grandmother never used the cistern water for cooking or drinking or anything. No, that was what the well was for. But the cistern took usage pressure off of the well so that the well wouldn't be depleted. So, yeah, we can, thank you for the question, Gene. We can collect rainwater here, but that decision was made, back in the mid-80s, my parents, when they were fixing this place up, decided to do away with the cistern system because of the amount of air pollution around here. Ron and Raleigh with a question. Hey, Bob, please tell me why anyone would want to heat hot water. Yes, I understand. I have tried time and time again to make sure that I say water heater, not hot water heater. But, yes, it's a water heater. I know. Drives me crazy, too. Jim observing, flushing with contaminated water. Now, that's a real solution. No. And those real solution things are something we just haven't got a lot of. They seem to be in rather short supply. Thanks to Henry. Henry, thank you very kindly for getting us going this evening. We are down to only $260 to raise to get us out of the month of January in good shape. There are remaining January bills yet to be paid. Alan the trucker asking, do they supply the students at schools in Charleston and the surrounding area with bottled water? They have been, and they say they're going to continue to do so until such time as the water is deemed absolutely safe. And that's what that principal at George Washington was talking about when he said, which I don't expect to be for quite some time. Goodness gracious. Asa with an observation from out Vancouver way. No different, Bob, than the TEPCO slime being put in charge of the nuclear disaster cleanup in Japan. Yeah, it's... At least we don't have the mob forcing homeless people to do the... Right. That has happened with regard to Fukushima, or so I have read. The Yakuza out there recruiting the people to... Oh, for God's sakes, don't give the DEP any ideas. So, with that in mind, I want to leave the waters of the great Kanawha River and the Kanawha River watershed. Yeah, I do. Because, see, there's another story that, well... It's scream-inducing. You know, I mentioned, you know, out west. No, really, out west, they have to get serious about water. Very serious about water. The absence, as Sparky has been keeping us apprised of, the absence of a snow cap on Mount Shasta is more than aesthetically displeasing. Because the snow caps are what provide the water for the snow caps in winter provide the water for the remainder of the year, and if the snow caps aren't there, neither is the water. Hence, no runoff. And here at the end of January and February 2nd being the halfway mark of winter, the absence of snow on Mount Shasta tends to indicate that there's... Now, tell me if I'm wrong. Can you make up an entire winter's worth of snowfall on Mount Shasta in February and March? Maybe into April? I somehow didn't think so. So anyway, the Western United States, and it's a function of the westward expansion of this country, dealt with water issues much more differently than did the eastern United States, especially east of the Mississippi. Because when you get, well, look, it's a fact. The Appalachian Mountains, which extend from Canada to Alabama, even a few low knee hills in northeast Mississippi, but the Appalachians extend in a great curve from northeast Mississippi through north Alabama, through north Georgia, through Tennessee and North Carolina, Virginia, West Virginia, Kentucky, Pennsylvania, New York, Maryland, and up into Vermont and into Canada and New Hampshire. The Appalachians are, quite simply put, a tropical rainforest. I used to periodically joke about how I didn't think I could ever acclimate myself were I to move to, say, the western portion of Oregon or Washington State, because I said I just couldn't stand to be rained on every day of my life for, you know, November, December, January, February, March. I couldn't. But you know what? I went and looked at the numbers. Guess what? It's pretty much the same thing. I mean, We get copious amounts of rain in Appalachia because we are a temperate rain forest. What forest remains, of course. And, you know, if you watch one of those really, really stupid alleged reality shows like, say, Appalachian Outlaws, they've got these helicopter flyover shots of these vast and endless expanses of forest, and you think, oh, I got, yeah, that's all right. Yeah, knock down a few mountains. What the hell? I got lots more. Well, we really don't. Ecosystems like this can't tolerate wholesale change. And it disappears faster than you think. During the Industrial Revolution, and the, you know, the roughly late 19th, early 20th century, virtually the entire state of West Virginia was deforested. There is very, very, very little to a point of being minuscule old growth left here. There's a stand of what are referred to as virgin hemlocks up somewhere around Cooper's Rock State Forest in northern West Virginia, up by the Pennsylvania line. You'll run past Cooper's Rock and Chestnut Ridge if you're eastbound on I-68, headed out of Morgantown toward Maryland. But, no, there's not a hell of a lot of old trees here. Once upon a time, of course, before the white folks got here, there were. And they were magnificent trees. American chestnuts that two people could not put their arms around. Huge trees. Arguably, managed forest land. Now, the new growth, the stuff that we now have, is kind of scrubby, and there's all kinds of brambles and multiflora rows and crap like that that make it hard to get through the undergrowth. But anyway, they deal with water differently because water is less readily available in the West. This particular story has to do with the state of Wyoming. And Wyoming has a Department of Environmental Quality that is apparently on a par, on an effectiveness par, somewhere south of the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection. Equal or worse than. The Wyoming Department of Environmental Quality is charged with taking care of the environmental resources of the state of Wyoming and making sure that they're not ruined forever and that they are, in fact, available for future generations, right? Stand by. Speaking of water, I need to grab a bottle of it. All better now. But, okay, so you got Wyoming, you get the Powder River Basin. You know, of course, that the Powder River Basin is just having the living bejesus strip mined out of it. And every now and then you'll find some brave rancher who will say, well, you know, my cattle don't have near as much water to drink as they used to, and every now and then the coal companies will turn the river black and cattle will die and whatnot. So any way you slice it, water is more scarce in a place like Wyoming than it is here, and arguably more precious. Enter an Australian company called Link Energy. L-I-N-C. Now, Link Energy wanted to come into Wyoming and do some experimenting. because even though the topography is not nearly as difficult in the Powder River Basin as it is in a place like Appalachia, because they can just, their strip mines are like mountaintop removal turned upside down. They're just giant, disgusting holes in the ground. But they have many of the same unsalutary effects on, say, water and air. Well, the state of Wyoming has its own standards that call for public comment on projects that are applied for that would have a potential adverse effect on the commons and the water of the state of Wyoming as a part of the commons of the people of the state of Wyoming and arguably part of the commons of the people of the United States of America. And hey, let's be more expansive and say it's part of the commons of the people of North America, the commons of the people of the Western Hemisphere, and while we're at it, how about it's part of the commons of the people of planet Earth? So this is the nature of the job that Wyoming's DEQ has. But Wyoming's DEQ doesn't see things quite that way. No. DEQ, just as... I think it was Joe Manchin who once informed the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection that your job is issuing permits. Kind of like how one time Don Blankenship said to issued a memo to his company, says, your job is producing coal. Your job is not worker safety. Your job is producing coal. If you're not moving coal, you're not making us money. And if you're not making us money, we're not going to last very long. That was a little bit before a couple of fellas died in a fire at the Aracoma mine. So, and, well, I guess, the legislative process was said by, I think, Bismarck to be much like making sausages. You didn't want to see either one made. But what often happens in a legislative process is that if you want to say, let's don't do something, the godforsaken word unless creeps into the conversation. For instance, let's not poison the water of the state of Wyoming unless there's a really profitable reason for doing it. Yeah. Exceptions to the rule. The rule is, we won't poison our own water. The exception is, unless somebody wants to make a fast buck by doing it. I guess it speaks to the fact that there just aren't a hell of a lot of human beings in Wyoming. And I don't say that snottily, because there aren't that many human beings in a little tiny state like West Virginia either. But you can imagine that once upon a time, you remember the days of that rugged individualism of which the Republicans are so fond, that there were actually water wars in the West. Hell, they had wars over whether or not folks could put up fences. The sheepers wanted fences, and the cattlemen wanted to just let the cattle roam free. At least that's the way the Western Hollywood movies portray it. But now the war is over energy and water. And Link Energy is concerned. I described the Wyoming coal extraction process as being like mountaintop removal upside down. Big, toxic, filthy hole in the ground. But even where the topography allows you to dig big, toxic, filthy holes in the ground to get at the toxic, filthy coal that they then want to put on railroad cars and send across Wyoming and Montana and into Washington and Oregon to put on boats to send to China, because China isn't quite polluted enough, quite poisoned enough with the effects of burning coal. Well, apparently there is some coal in Wyoming that you just can't get to by digging a great damn big toxic hole in the ground. Enter the aforementioned Link, L-I-N-C, Energy. Link Energy has an idea, and they want to try it out on the few human beings who still live around the Powder River Basin of Wyoming. Do we need to put Stan at the end of Wyoming? Now, here's the plan Link Energy has. They want to dig underground, okay? And they want to go down as far as the coal seams that people can't get at, corporations can't get at, by digging a great big toxic hole in the ground. Now, when they dig down to where the coal that you can't get at by digging a big toxic hole in the ground is, here's what they want to do. They want to set the coal on fire underground. I'll take a minute. I didn't warn you for that. I didn't give you the duct tape and tennis ball warning. You just go ahead and go get it. Just keep screaming until you get the tennis ball in your mouth, and then, yeah. Oh, really? That's not a joke. I looked all over this thing. It doesn't say onion anywhere. This is not some April Fool's joke no. It's not like those singing little, looked like a bunch of turds, lumps of coal with Christmas hats on them that the clean coal folks put out a couple of years ago. This isn't from the Ted Cruz coloring book. This is from an actual engineering prospectus. Now, they're not just going to send some dude down there with an acetylene torch to, you know, burn the coal. No, because that would take too long. What they want to do instead... Did I mention that water is precious out there? Yes, I did. What they want to do instead, and really, you want to have the duct tape on before I get to this. What they want to do instead is take some of that precious water. No, who am I kidding? They want to take a lot of that precious water and they then want to inject the precious water along with pure oxygen, in order to make the coal underground that's still underground burn real, real good. And then they want to collect the synthetic natural gas. And I got to say, as a longtime practitioner of the art of knowing words, that synthetic natural gas causes me no small amount of consternation. Synthetic natural gas will come off of the great big goddamned underground fire that they start. I just peeped over into the chat room for a second, where I noticed that Verblin said, Bob, we're already doing this in Centralia, Pennsylvania for the past 50 years. Yes, you are. That was kind of intention. You know that Centralia, Pennsylvania? Yeah. I think we talked about it one night. I think maybe Jeremy mentioned it too. Centralia, Pennsylvania is a town that had to be absolutely evacuated. Centralia, Pennsylvania had to stop being a town because of a raging fire underground in an old coal mine that is still burning to this day. And has been, in fact, burning for 50 years. I mean, in Centralia, like, you know, the pavement got hot. The yards got hot. Jan in the chat room just noted, Jerry just screamed, "Holy effing cow!" Has this sunk in yet? Because I'm still working on it. And I've been, I mean, I figured this was going to be part of the filibobster for quite a while earlier today. Because I just, I want to smack something. Kick furniture. Ron and Raleigh, with the astute observation, underground fires? Well, Bob, what could possibly go wrong? No, they really want to do this. Now, here's where it gets interesting. The Wyoming Department of Environmental Quality, Mr. Orwell, courtesy phone. Mr. Orwell, courtesy phone. Was so eager to see this experimental project go forward that they kind of said, screw the citizens. Man, somebody get them a book of matches. Somebody, yeah, really. No, somebody get one of those little barbecue lighters with the long snout on it and run it over to Link Industries, Link Energy, on the double quick, because we want, get this going. The EPA got wind of this and said no. Now, they didn't say, no, you can't set the coal on fire underground and use the water and injected pure oxygen to turn it into synthetic natural gas and bring it to the surface and try to make a buck off of it. No. The EPA's Denver office did not say anything of the sort. They said that the Wyoming Department of Environmental Quality ignored the will of the people too quickly. I wish I was joking. But that's what it boils down to. Because central to this entire plan was Link Energy's need to have an entire aquifer. You know, underground cell of tappable, potable water. Link Energy applied to have an entire aquifer exempted. Remember we were talking about the exemptions, the unless part? We want to have clean water in Wyoming unless somebody can make a fast buck at it, at ruining it. Yeah. Link Energy needed an exemption from the Federal Safe Drinking Water Act. And the DEQ said, you do? Here. Done. It's like magic, ain't it? Because job creators and freedom. Wolverines! But when the EPA caught them, the Wyoming Department of Environmental Quality said, oh, shucks, you called us. No, we didn't give the citizens enough time to complain about us potentially letting an Australian company poison their water. No, we didn't do it. We didn't give them enough time. We just wanted to get to job creating. and create some more of that energy independence. Because the decision to exempt the aquifer from the Safe Drinking Water Act was made before any notice was given for public participation. Yeah. Now, this is a pilot plant that Link Energy is planning. It would be the only one of its kind in the United States. By the way, the aquifer, the reason it has to be exempted from the Safe Drinking Water Act, well, that's because you cannot consider water to be safe for drinking after it's had a shitload of benzene pumped into it. I said benzene. Now, for those of you who want to do the research, they're talking about despoiling the Fort Union aquifer of Wyoming. The Fort Union aquifer is used, apparently, for a water supply for homes and ranches and entire, well, do you say cities in Wyoming? Towns? Municipal subdivisions? Now, on the other hand, Link Energy says, well, we don't want to poison the part of the aquifer that is used for drinking water purposes. We want to poison a different part of the aquifer. I learn a little bit more about geology every day because I didn't know that benzene molecules would stop at a stop sign. Better living through chemistry. By the way, they did have a hearing in November, and residents stood up, being free citizens and everything, and by a margin of about 6-1, they said, hell no! And the DEQ said, screw you! And green-lighted the state research and development license to drill into the Powder River Basin. Thousands of feet deep. Link Energy, by the way, was trying to get away with something similar in its home country, Australia, but they had to abandon the project because they couldn't meet the regulatory standards of that country. By the way, this process that would pump benzene into a precious Wyoming aquifer, it's part of clean coal technology. Have a drink. Drink up. So here endeth the filibobster for this Friday on the front porch of January the 31st, 2014. Jump right in when we open up the gate on the front porch and we'll get the conversation going. Well, how about that, Ron? Ron and Raleigh noting, by the way, did you hear, Bob, that the New Madrid Fault is now active? Add that to fracking and the expanding Yellowstone Caldera and We have the makings of a horror movie plot. Yeah. Yeah, we do. So if you want in on the telephone side of Friday on the Front Porch, 304-658-3333. That's the number to dial. We got four slots for y'all. And in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, well, for our purposes, it's limitless. This is the Horn.
Oh, Mississippi, she's calling my name. Catfish are jumping, that paddle wheel bumping. Black water keep rolling on past of the sand.
Oh, black water, keep on rolling.
Mississippi moon, won't you keep on shining on me?
Oh, black water, keep on rolling.
Mississippi moon, won't you keep on shining on me?
Oh, black water, keep on rolling.
Mississippi moon, won't you keep on shining on me? Yeah, keep on shining your light. Gonna make everything great. Mama's gonna make everything alright. And I ain't got no worries, cause I ain't in no hurry.
Some funky Dixieland, pretty mama, come and take me by the hand.
By the hand, take me by the hand, pretty mama, come and dance with your daddy all night long.
I like to hear some funky Dixieland, pretty mama, come and take me by the hand.
Yeah, that's an entirely different understanding and comprehension of the phrase black water, isn't it? Black water around here means something terrible, terrible, terrible's been dumped by the coal industry into a stream somewhere. I'm not talking about the black, silty richness of the new. No. It really is. Friday on the Front Porch on the Horn. And just a reminder, thanks again to Henry for jumping in to help out with the $280 hole we're trying to crawl out of to meet end January in the good. Anybody else wanting to help out is more than welcome to do so. Let's open up the lines on Friday on the front porch, one by one by one. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, sir.
Hey, Bill, how you doing?
Anybody I can, the easy ones twice.
Here, here.
Thank you.
Yeah, he'll be here all night.
Oh, you're boring the hell out of everybody.
You're doing fine. Stand by. Hey, welcome to the program.
Here, Bob.
All right, good deal. And line three. Who have I got?
You talking to me, Bob?
I think I'm talking to you, Dan.
Okay, Dan from Syracuse.
Yep. I thought I had you. I get okay. I get good with voices after a little bit of work.
Yes, sir. You do.
And one more. Hey, welcome to the Friday on the Front Porch.
Is that me?
That's you, Kevin.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so we got Bill, we got Jim, we got Dan, and we got Kevin. And now, over to the Skype line. Mouseketeer roll call.
Hey, Bob, I still got the bat signal out.
Okay, well, others will wander by in due time, I'm sure.
Larry might be indisposed for a few minutes.
No worries. No worries at all. But as it stands...
Waggy should be here.
Hello. How are you doing?
Yeah, I saw Waggy there. And Larry will be along presently. All right, well, let's get this thing rolling. As if it wasn't already. Duncan, does this make you just a little bit crazy when you hear stories like this, given the desperate need for water that your entire state is in?
Well, I was reading this article while you were talking about that. I don't know if you caught it. Just came out in the LA Times. California drought prompts first ever zero water allocation.
Wow.
What that basically means is officials Friday said that for the first time ever, the state water project that helps supply a majority of Californians may be unable to make any deliveries except to maintain public health and safety. And I did see the governor go on TV today, or a little spot of him, you know, telling people about flushing their toilets. And the old saying, if it's yellow, let it mellow.
Yeah.
Down comes to mind.
Yeah, exactly. So y'all are already there?
Well, they're already calling it because they did get a couple feet of snow in the Sierras the other day. But that's a drop in the bucket.
Well, right. That was the question I was asking earlier. Namely, how many feet is a normal snow season in the Sierras?
I wouldn't even chance a guess, but I mean it's probably 20-30 feet maybe. I mean, we've had snow up at Mount Lassen that was like 40 feet high. When they plow the road, you drive through there.
Yeah, they're canyons, aren't? I mean, they're canyons of snow.
Yeah, and that's in middle of June or July because they usually don't get the park open till then.
Have you seen an extended or anything? That's the question that I asked earlier. If it just went absolutely snow crazy. Can you make up in a
It would have to go every damn day now, probably.
Yeah, almost blizzard conditions.
Yeah, so in the mountains, yeah. Drop a lot of snow.
Because trying to make up for an entire winter's worth of snow in a half a winter, that's almost too much to ask for in the first place, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we've had these before, but I mean, not this bad. I mean, it's been a couple years coming. I mean, we haven't got enough snow to couple of years ago, and then last year, and then this year, it's just been even worse.
And the and the idea that at the same time this Australian company wants to deliberately set coal on fire underground, and you know I'm not trying to be like you know a caveman and you know with the whole you know, fire bad, no. But they're digging all the coal they can get out of the Powder River Basin for all they're worth. Why in God's name, and Waggy, I invite you or anybody. Why do is this just we're developing a technology for future use, and it's when we're down to burning the last few tons of the stuff. I mean, what is this?
Yeah, pretty much. Because the global inventory of fossil fuels is declining, and what's left is harder and harder to get to. It'll get to the point where eventually it takes as much energy to get it out as it does to that you get from burning, and it'll turn just to a regular kind of mineral that you mine for, because we still make plastics and medicines and stuff out of it. But until then, if there's any net energy gain, they'll try to terraform the planet.
I mean, it seems to me like if you're getting to the point where I mean, it takes a certain amount of it takes a certain amount of energy to create O2, right?
Oh yeah.
And it takes a certain amount of energy to drill thousands of feet into the crust of the earth.
Mm-hmm. That's why they're counting on the energy from the burning the coal itself to help with the extraction. Which, yeah, it's a political decision. We just got to decide when enough is enough.
Well, I read the story, and I guess it just marks me as a bit of a simpleton, or maybe tree hugger, or simpleton tree hugger, or something. I stared at the screen with my mouth hanging open.
Because, but historically, the precedent isn't real good. There are several great civilizations that brought themselves to their knees because they ran out of energy and then ended up just completely decimating all the lands around, trying to grab every bit they could to keep their empire going. I think the Romans did that with wood, cutting down forests.
Well, they deforested the entire Iberian Peninsula, I do believe.
The Maya.
Uh-huh. Before they finally, fell apart completely.
And the Maya, I think that was Jim that just said, the Maya deforested Central America.
All things to make lime, to whitewash their buildings.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're working on the peat fields in Ireland and Russia.
Well, I remember being astonished when I was in Germany seeing that, they dug a giant hole in the ground to get at stuff that was little more than carboniferous mud, lignite. And I think if I recall what Fritz was telling us, I think they're going after lignite in Arkansas and Mississippi. I mean, are we really? Because if we're going after that stuff, that means we've gotten to a point of desperation that most people don't even understand. Of course, most people think that electricity comes from the wall socket, right?
Yeah, I think
long
successful
ago,
model.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I think long ago the low-hanging fruit has been grabbed, extracted. A good book on the subject is Crossing the Rubicon, Michael Ruper, where he talks about peak oil having been back in the late 70s. But
for the U.S.,
look where we're going and how look where we're going for our current fields, the deep oceans. And when you consider that the Earth burns 72 or 3 million barrels of oil a day, when they talk about a few billion barrels available somewhere, what is that, a week and a half? Do the numbers. It's like a match burning out. So it's very distressing. And with respect to the coal burning underground, Bill Bryson deals with Centralia and I think another town in Pennsylvania.
Yep.
When he wrote about it, those at least one or I think two towns in A Walk in the Woods, about his walk through 800 and some miles of the Appalachian Trail.
Well, there was
and
a documentary.
It was just
about
as you described. Hot earth, smoldering, you can't live there. Because the stuff is difficult to ignite and yet very difficult to extinguish.
Well, at this point, impossible to extinguish.
So
with what this Australian outfit wants to do, is it just presumed as a function of engineering that once they withdraw the oxygen and the water, the fire will just go out? I mean, is this special coal that just goes out?
I think Chris Hedges deals with a lot of these people that either are political so-called leaders or industrial leaders. His contention is, and I believe this, is that these people are incompetent. When you spoke of this earlier tonight, Bob, I thought, well, what a goddamn harebrained scheme that is.
Well, okay, thank you.
Yes.
I mean, that's crazy. That's crazier than a sprayed roach.
You bet.
And yet somebody at the Department of Environmental Quality in Wyoming is going, well, this looks like a pretty good idea.
A testament to ownership.
I think somebody over at the Department of Quality in Wyoming has a speculative financial interest in one or more of the companies involved. And is thinking getting rich just on the stock price going up because of the possibility of it happening. It doesn't actually have to happen.
Well, you know, one part of the story that I didn't really get to, Waggy, is that the Democratic see what I mean about, well, the Democratic former governor of Wyoming has been hired by Link Energy to represent them in their dealings before the EPA and the Wyoming Department of Environmental Quality in all of their permit applications. And he spent his entire governorship hollering about, we need clean coal.
But, you know, there's no such thing.
Right. It's an advertising slogan that's been used at least since the beginning of the 20th century, and that's all it has ever been, is an advertising slogan.
I mean, they may as well say, we need clean cyanide.
Yeah, fat-free lard.
Yeah, exactly.
Although I guess they did come up with a fat-free fat, but it turned out that that stuff, what was the name of that stuff?
Hydrogenated whatever.
No. It was some weird little name, but then they had to put warning, and I'm not trying to be gross just because it's dinner time somewhere, but I remember with the, because they made potato chips with it and stuff.
Exactly
it was
what
fried.
I was thinking of, yeah, the artificial fat for potato chips.
But they wound up having to put labels on it that said, among other things, that the side effects might include anal leaking.
That wasn't so long ago.
No, that's 3-4 years ago.
Yeah.
Olestra. Thank you, Ron and Raleigh. Olestra.
I thought Colestra. It's Olestra. Got it. Yeah, you're right.
But you know, it's the same mindset, Jim. It really is. But it's a harebrained scheme. I mean, this is just I try to be careful in reading a story like this because my first inclination is, why isn't every human being that consumes water in Wyoming not standing and protesting till hell freezes over to stop this? Well, they came out and they spoke 6-1 against it, and the DEQ said, screw you. And meanwhile, I'm just watching the chat room here. I don't know if you guys are watching it, too, but I'm sitting here watching what Nydia is reporting from down in Kanawha County, and the little hairs are standing up on the back of my neck. It's bad enough what I was reporting out of the newspaper, but Nydia lives there. And she's sitting here saying, people are really freaking out. She said, I'm seeing a big change in attitude here. The water, and this is the one that got the, this is from Fayette County, West Virginia. Okay. Nydia reports in the chat room, the water this morning bubbled and was oily.
Wow.
And that's new. And meanwhile, she talks about the fact. She says, I work with a lady with two little kids, and she's not bathing them, but they're still in diapers.
Right.
And then she said they flushed the Department of Environmental Protection building three times. She said you can't even change the water in a fish tank safely.
God.
Mm-hmm. No, you can't. Not at all.
So
it verifies what has been said. These people don't know what they're doing. TEPCO doesn't know what they're doing. They got a tiger by the tail. They're clueless. How do you contain that monster over there?
Well,
and it sounds like the same deal is going on down in West Virginia, just a different details. But with respect to these guys digging blindly, it used to be known as UFPO up here in New York. Now it's Dig Safe New York, but Underground Facilities Protection Organization was an organization among all utilities, and all anybody ever had to do without any cost to them, if they were digging with any power equipment, was to place a call, have everything marked out. I located for the phone company for years, and it was the easiest thing you ever had to do. Now, if you're on your own private property and you're digging, then you, if you're responsible, you need to hire your own private locator, and they're available. So, unless this outfit is a public utility, and this organization. And every state has one. It's supported by the utilities. Nobody wants to get their stuff whacked because it's a real pain in the neck.
But see, Freedom Industries couldn't even tell these guys that they hired. Okay.
Yeah.
And I don't want to just sit here and go into a screaming fit, you know, with
sure.
everybody on the online.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is from the Department of Jesus H. Christ. These are people that they hired, and Freedom Industries couldn't even tell them, hey, there's a big pipeline full of that shit down there. Might want to be careful where you're digging.
Yeah, I know. But it speaks to the rank irresponsibility of this organization.
Well, but let's not let the DEP off the hook here. I mean, come on. Now, I'm not... I've seen, for instance, you know, when the gas company's checking for leaks and they drive along with this little vehicle that sticks these probes down through the asphalt and senses for, you know, free-range gas.
Yep.
And you know, Lord knows we've got any number of fellas who spend their free time walking around swinging metal detectors over the ground. Most of the time they pick up pop-tops, but every now and then there's a diamond in the dung or a diamond ring. Or,
mm-hmm.
You get the idea.
Sure.
So before you bring in the excavator, and I'm just checking it because I've never done this work. Before you bring in the great big excavating machine, before you sink its clawed bucket into the ground the first time, could we ask somebody to run over it with? I mean, if and assuming that they looked at the boys from Freedom Industries and said, "Any pipelines here?" Hell, we don't know. How about a metal detector? How about a sharp stick into the dirt? Okay, dirt's probably frozen. Anything. I mean, we're talking about at this point in time, we are, let's see, 11, 22 days past this disaster. You think maybe we could get hold of the boys in the Pentagon for maybe one of their ground penetrating radar devices? I mean, there is incompetence at work here. That is absolutely. I mean, I trust Larry Moe and Curly at this point.
That was my point, Bob. It's a simple transmitter and a receiver deal that is a locator. You don't even have to clamp onto the pipe. As long as there's metal, and you're anywhere near it, that transmitter will send that signal down that metal, and your receiver, it's a handheld wand, will pick up that transmission. It'll even tell you the depth.
Okay, we know this stuff is a corrosive. How about this then? Maybe the pipe was so corroded that it wouldn't necessarily register. How about that?
It'll read it until that point where it's corroded through.
At which point you've got a leak.
At which point you've got an interruption or an open, essentially, as in electrical terms.
Hmm. Oh, thank you.
No, you're right, Bob. At which point it wouldn't hold the fluid anymore. Yeah.
And you don't, and you know, maybe the ground would be squishy and smelling like licorice by then, or not. Maybe it was. Yes. Maybe it's doing the gravity thing and going down.
It's lighter than water, so it would float on the water table. Which, if the water table rises, means it would get to the surface and probably stick there.
Most gaff lines out here, they have a locator on them, a cable that goes.
A tracer.
They have test points where they can put a tester on and follow the line out.
Sure.
Yeah, in other words, there's a dozen ways to find buried pipes, and they didn't use any of them.
Not one.
Here in California, it's called USA Alert. And what you do is you take a can of white upside-down marking paint, and you mark out where you want you're going to dig. And then everybody comes, and everybody has a different color spray paint.
That's right.
So you know where everything's at.
Everybody marks to the white paint.
Yeah.
Okay, question for technologically oriented. Nydia asking in the chat room, should we buy tankless water heaters? You see, there's, and maybe you're tired of hearing me say it, but I feel a little Cassandra-ish out of this because I really have been asking, what about the water lines, what about the water heaters, and nobody knows that better than you guys do. I've been asking it for 3 weeks. Calculate, if you dare, 100,000 homes and how much it would cost to replumb every one of them.
Four figures apiece.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't get it done for less than $2,000, could you?
I wouldn't think so.
Oh, no.
Because the water heater itself is going to be a solid six, right?
Yeah, we paid over $600 for ours a couple years ago.
And, you know, and the people doing the install have got to be paid, so that's the labor cost, right?
Well,
and there's trenching.
Not when you have a friend that's a plumber.
Well, yeah, no, but there's not 100,000 people with a friend that's a plumber in the Kanawha Valley, Sparky.
Yeah. You're talking contractor rates for union plumbers.
Yeah.
You'll need trenchers.
Yeah. Okay, so if it was just $1,000 times 300 times 100,000 homes, that's $100 million in damage, isn't it?
As a start.
I don't have my calculator out. It was
let's calculate the disposal cost of all of this stuff which has been rendered toxic.
Oh, but now you're talking about another $1,000 to remove the old stuff. Because the hard part there is finding it all. A lot of homes probably have two or three plumbing systems that have been put in over the years, and you got to find the current one and dig it up. And
what about the whole distribution system?
Well, see, that's where I'm getting to. If the
that's expensive.
I know. Now we're talking about real money. But Sparky, what are the mains made of that deliver the water throughout the West Virginia American Water System?
Probably a mix of asbestos, cement, steel, probably even some lead in there, copper, bronze. You probably have some of everything because I'm guessing your water systems date back a long time.
PVC.
Yeah, some of the new PVC. So probably some of the old ABS stuff, too, that we don't use anymore. Probably some of everything. But the hard part's getting to it because it runs on the right-of-ways.
Years, right?
Well, so at this point in time, can we say that we're probably up to $1 billion in damages?
Easily.
Yeah.
At least.
Oh, my God, easily.
And
has it extended beyond nine counties, Bob?
No. No, it's the nine counties. But the thing is, while the population of those nine counties, I mean, good God, nine counties in Texas, what's the population of that? Nine counties in California. What's the population of that? Now, it's a relatively small number of people, but they are still people. And what we are is we tend to be dispersed.
Yep.
So when they're talking about Lincoln County, you know, you're talking about communities where you may have, 25 homes that run up a holler. And we all know what I'm talking about when I say holler, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it may be another 5 miles to the next holler and another 25 homes. And so the far-flung nature of it presents its own logistical dilemma. And the thing is, you know, when it's sandy or look at the monumental screw up that was Katrina. But we're talking about population centers where people are fairly close together. And we talk about rebuilding. But my point with this disaster in West Virginia is that it has not even been permitted to speak of this as a disaster. This is only a crisis. Granted, there have been disaster area declarations, but it's a crisis, and nobody's talking about there being any permanent damage. If I lived in the Kanawha Valley, I think I'd be ripping the shit out right now. I mean, wouldn't you?
Yes. Yeah, I would. Replacing with copper too.
And oh boy, that adds
because
up
if more comes your way, you're gonna have to do the same thing over again.
Right. And at what point do you know that it won't?
Right.
For instance, one of the bills relating to this disaster, you know, because our legislature is in session. One of the bills relating to this disaster has been triple referenced, okay? It's been referenced to three committees. That means it has to pass all three committees in order to get out.
Onto the floor.
Yeah. Now, the legislative session is half over. What does that tell you? And meanwhile, with the exception of, bless his heart, Dr. Rahul Gupta, who said at the town hall meeting the other night that West Virginia American Water should, by God, be there. They're just, you know, the news story this evening was they've already spent $192,000 trucking in water, as if we're supposed to give them a fucking cookie for that.
What is that?
I'm sorry. I just threw out an I'm sorry.
Don't apologize.
No, I get really wrought about this stuff.
Of course. You mean they weren't even represented in that meeting?
No, they didn't show up at the town hall, Jim.
Well, that ought to tell you something right there.
Yeah.
They could care less.
But the fact of the matter is, this is a company that operates for profit and is traded on one of the stock exchanges.
Mm-hmm.
And they have gotten away with playing the innocent victim here.
Right.
Well, let's work with some metaphors here real quick. If I am walking down a city street and somebody comes up from behind me that I don't see and knocks me over the head and steals my wallet, am I at fault in that situation?
No.
If I am walking down a city street that I know to be a place where there are muggers, and someone knocks me over the head and steals my wallet?
Well, I've seen references like that, Bob, where somebody, you know, somebody will get whipped and some friend of yours will say, well, he shouldn't have been there to begin with, or she, whatever.
Right, and the reason I'm trying to find any metaphor that works at this point in time. West Virginia American Water was not quietly running a water purification plant in the middle of a field of sparkle fairy dust flowers. They were running a water purification plant a mile and a half downriver from an ancient tank farm, and in the middle of a place that is commonly referred to as Chemical Valley. Does that not impose upon that company a heightened degree of scrutiny of all of their surroundings?
Yes.
Culpability.
Because all the finger pointing is at Freedom Industries. And I'm damned if I can see how West Virginia American Water gets a pass. And you know, Lottie in the chat room says one thing a water company will try is to raise its rates to cover its losses. They'll go to the Public Service Commission, and the Public Service Commission will rubber stamp it. And I'm a customer of West Virginia American Water, okay? Not the same system, but the same corporation. And I think we've had something like 75% to 100% rate increases over the last 6 years, 7 years, 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
That means prices have doubled. And the water's not any better.
Bob, you're the lawyer. What's
no,
the,
actually, no, I'm not, but go ahead.
Okay, well, you know a little about the law. Negligence that results in human harm, even if it hasn't directly caused a death yet, it's certainly sent several hundred people to the hospital. Because the water plant folks were negligent. They should have caught it much earlier and not let it get run through the water supply for days.
Well, that's one theory. The other thing that we found out is that they immediately, well, not immediately, but they jumped out and put on charcoal filters at the intakes to catch it. And then they found out it was passing through the charcoal filters. When the only,
saturated them pretty quick.
When the only reasonable and prudent thing to do is shut it all down. Cincinnati did that.
Yeah, because they didn't know what they were dealing with. Nobody knew anything about the stuff.
And that goes to my earlier point.
That's criminal negligence, and there's got to be civil liability in there too, personal,
yeah,
of the personal type.
They're guessing, and you know, they're running a business too. They don't want to shut down their profits.
Right, because at no point in time can they put the well-being of their customers first. They must always be cognizant. Their board of directors, their officers, are all charged fiduciarily with maximizing the profits to the shareholders.
The legal responsibility, that's correct.
That's the only legal duty that they have.
Yeah.
And I think we're learning that the hard way.
I'll tell you, Bob, in this situation, it's almost insurmountable.
Well, from the historical perspective, this feels like the rebuild. I mean, this feels like a little tiny microcosm of the rebuilding of Europe. You know, everything's ruined. Now, granted, there aren't any buildings, but you know, okay, the tallest building in Charleston is Laidley Tower. And it's maybe 20 stories or something. Replumb that.
Yeah, but who's going to be responsible for the Marshall Plan that rebuilt Europe to have the same effect here?
Well, this is where we run into those if clauses that are so troublesome. If we had a functional government, if we had people in government who believed in the purpose of government, this would be a no-brainer.
But we don't.
And so, you know, my fear here, my horror here, my nightmare here is that West Virginia and this nine-county area is just going to be left to fend for itself and 5 years or 10 years or 15 years from now, when the doctor's trying to explain what leukemia means to a 15-year-old, then all we're going to do is say, well, it's God's will. And the boys at West Virginia American Water and the shareholders of West Virginia American Water and these giggling monsters from the coal industry will just keep laughing all the way to the bank like they always have.
And they'll be long gone.
It's effectively become a nine-county Superfund site.
Well, yeah, and if you add in the rest of the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone,
yes.
Jesus, it's a 20 counties. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there is some overlap. You know, Boone County has mountaintop removal. Some of Kanawha County has mountaintop removal. There's mountaintop removal in Lincoln County. There's mountaintop. You get the idea.
Sure.
But, and again, some people have been trying really hard to make the not just the gravity, but the breadth of this ongoing horror obvious. Jeff Biggers had a brilliant piece, I think, at The Guardian today. And talking about, you know, absent justice, the future of West Virginia and Central Appalachia is more disaster. And
is that the U.S. Version of The Guardian, Bob, or the UK?
Yeah. If you look over on my Facebook page, you'll find I think Ron posted it there.
And if I live a Facebook-free life,
then hang on a minute. Let's see here. I'll have it for you in just a second.
That's all right. I'll just search Jeff Biggers.
No, I got it. Yeah, it's The Guardian. It is guardian.com. Comment is free. And it should pop up pretty easily.
Okay.
Oh, this is interesting. I'm just learning from Nydia in the chat room that Governor Tomlin, who was scheduled to speak to address the West Virginia Coal Association annual meeting, for which a journalist wishing to cover it had to pony up $945. he was a no-show.
The governor was a no-show?
Yeah. And that means that the Coal Association looked at him and said, Earl Ray, you got yourself some problems, and we understand, you done the right thing by us when the first thing you said before you said anything about whether anybody was all right or anything, you said it wasn't about coal. We understand. You're a good soldier. You just stay home, Earl Ray.
What do you reckon the fallout would be if this happened in northern New Jersey right about now? What would be a big event coming?
Well, I think there would. I don't think you'd be able to turn on the television. I don't think Justin Bieber would be able to drown that out. Which reminds me, I've got a plan. We need to figure out a way to get Justin Bieber to Charleston, West Virginia, and show him drinking a glass of water.
And
then maybe the world would give an F.
Yeah.
I mean, I know this would sound bitter. I know this does sound bitter, but I hope I've been as strong an advocate when disasters have struck other places. I think we spent an awful lot of time on the BP Horizon disaster, and we spent an awful lot of time talking about Katrina. And Sandy, but you know what's interesting?
You don't sound over the top to me, Bob.
Well, yeah, thank you. You know what's interesting here, though? At least with Sandy, there was enough coverage that the weirdos would come out and say, well, we'll be happy to help them people in New Jersey as long as we cut some spending somewhere else. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody here, nobody with this disaster is even talking about it being particularly costly. And yet here we are, a bunch of highly intelligent, at least y'all are, but workaday, everyday Americans, and we've sat here and come up with a compelling argument that the damages from this are exceeding $1 billion. Where is anybody talking about needing $1 billion for West Virginia? Our own senator won't say it. Our members of the House of Representatives won't say it. Good old Earl Ray Tomlin will not say it. And even the people that we tend to count on to point and go, hey, look, aren't saying it. I mean, God bless them. I haven't seen a blast email lately from the Sierra Club talking, no. And they certainly, they've talked about West Virginia deserves clean water. Well, cue up Clint Eastwood, right? Deserving's got nothing to do with it. West Virginia does deserve clean water. So does every other living human being on this planet. But How do you get the clean water you deserve if everything that is poisoned is still in your house, your church, your hospital, your school, your nursing home, your courthouse, your mall, your grocery store? I mean, this affects the way teeny tiny little things. I mean, you think about walking through the fresh produce aisle of your grocery store, and every now and then those little misters come on and go, just to keep the veggies wet enough to weigh a little bit more at the checkout, but also to keep them, you know, freshish.
Assume freshness.
You've been thinking about this a lot, haven't you? You get the grocery stores.
Yeah. Because it's everything, Sparky.
I bet that they stop.
Okay.
Stop the misters here.
Well.
Oh, I bet they do. Yeah.
Every time they start them here, I start thinking about where's the men's room. You know, after having to get old.
Hey, Larry, if you're going to say something, say something. If you're not, mute.
I would like to say something. First of all, I asked Bob last week about how we could organize people, the citizens of West Virginia, to get up to the coal companies and get up to the state government house and have a continual protest against this blankety-blank-blank crap that's going on. And it is blankety-blank crap going on in the state. And I think that he mentioned that would be, you know, a good strategy. If I remember, when I was talking with Lottie, he was saying that if I tried to go to West Virginia, I don't know what they'd call me, a Westerner or a Northerner or whatever, or somebody from out of state, that they would really, the people of the state would really resent it because, and they would even hate people from out of state for coming in because the people there are so dependent upon coal for their livelihood. And anytime anybody does try to come into the state, they largely, even though they're being poisoned, largely support the coal company's industry to be there. And then I have had friends last week that were telling me, well, if somebody doesn't like the situation there, that they could always go out of state. Well, you know, I mean, I don't know what to do with all this information. I mean, I'd like to go there and organize everybody and, you know, if I could physically organize everybody and just do a round-the-clock, you know, protest up at the State House and over at the coal companies. You know,
hey, Larry.
Okay.
We're talking about water, so what is going on in Berkeley? Anything that you know of?
Well, as far as this issue, there's nothing happening in Berkeley.
I don't know what water system you're on or whatever, but
we're on East Bay Mud. East Bay Municipal Utility District.
Oh man, maybe you can look that up during a break in the conversation, see what's going on there, because they've called a statewide. I don't know if you heard me, but it's basically the State Water Project, they've called they want everybody to conserve except for, you know, showering and limit your flushing and that kind of thing. Do not water your lawns. Do not wash your cars. That's what that means.
Oh, what about agriculture?
Well, as far as that...
Well, the agriculture is... The bad part of the agriculture is they'll start firing up their wells, the ones that do have it, if they're not getting water from it.
Yeah.
Do you know about the California, what do you call it? It's an aqueduct that runs from the Delta all the way to Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
And the farmers have pump water out of there, well, they're going to have to go to wells instead of using that water because that water will be
depleted.
It'll be somewhat down because they talk about it in here that in this article they're not going to run the pumps as much from the Delta, you know, from the bay, right at the bay with Sacramento and San Joaquin Rivers meet. That's where they pump, they get the water from.
Yeah, by the way, Sparky, Marty tells me that East Bay Mud draws a portion of its water from the Sacramento and American Rivers, mostly the Sacramento.
Yeah.
Well, they get a lot from Folsom Lake too, and it's way down.
Yeah. Bob, did you have as far as my water consumption goes, I don't think that I use a lot of it. But for bathing, I need to be in warm water and a lot of it. But in any case, as far as what I was talking about my frustration about all the fracking and the stuff that's going on in other places, or what I was talking about before, does anyone have any comments about what I was talking about? Because it seems like it's a situation that has to be dealt with by some kind of action to let people know that it's an intolerable objective reality.
May I say something, gentlemen?
Go ahead, Jim.
You'd be regarded as an Auslander, a foreigner.
Yeah,
and there would be people here who would say, why are you coming in here trying to stir up all this trouble? Because the same thing has happened to a certain extent with people who have come in to support Bob's cause, mountaintop removal.
Yeah.
Well, I've been accused from not being from around here.
Right. I mean, your efforts would not be appreciated.
Ron and Raleigh said something very similar just a moment ago, Jim. He said, let's go back to the tried and true. He said, Larry would be considered an outside agitator.
Absolutely.
Yes.
The 60s. Yeah, that's what they call them.
Very common in the civil rights era. They were using that term a lot, yeah.
Yeah.
So, Bob, what do you do? And what do you do, folks?
As is so often the case, our polity here, Larry, is disabled by virtue of its having already been co-opted. Because everything that's being done is being done first after consulting the controlling industries. Okay? I have no doubt about that whatsoever. So with that understood, some of these things need to be said to the Barbara Boxers of the world. You know, she's chair of the Environment Committee, is she not, in the Senate?
Yes, she is.
Did anybody ever check on her old man's situation, where money comes from?
That's Feinstein, isn't it?
Boxer's old man.
Yeah.
Boxer's husband, Stuart Boxer, is a very very well-known labor attorney. He's a labor attorney, Stuart Boxer.
Labor attorney for the plaintiff or for the defense?
He's a union.
He
represents unions.
Yeah, he represents the good guys, Kevin.
Okay.
Joe Manchin is never going to talk about anybody's water heater unless there's some way for Joe Manchin to benefit by talking about the water heater. So, there's going to have to be something said outside. But that's nothing new in this country. Slavery was not ended by Southern senators who suddenly said, we have decided we were in the wrong. No. It took male legislators to finally give in once enough people realized they were on the wrong side of history and grant women the vote. It took straight people to create marriage equality for gay people. And so it is not that outlandish to think it's going to take non-hillbillies to help solve a hillbilly problem. Any flaw in that?
In each of those cases, Bob, it was either the majority or the more powerful that aided the victims. disenfranchised.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And
I,
you know,
I've suspected for a long time that what will happen is a Tunisia-like event where a street vendor got shaken down by a cop and went crazy and immolated himself.
Well, see, I don't. But that's another angle to this largely sociocultural problem. I've been saying, okay, what we really need to do is, we need 10 or 20,000 West Virginians from the affected area and their allies from the other parts of West Virginia surrounding the Capitol and the governor's mansion and saying, you know, we're not going to leave until we get what we want.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I'm suggesting.
And the problem, though, is that we're not going to do that anymore. And Nydia just said the same thing in the chat room. We're going to sit still for it. And for a variety of reasons, because we don't have much of a progressive infrastructure in this state, because we have a leadership vacuum in the progressive infrastructure of this state, because the teabaggers are never going to help anybody but themselves. You know, I guess if you're a teabagger, you're just waiting for the free market to solve the problem in Kanawha County, right?
Yes.
Solve the problems everywhere, yes.
Well, Bob, I got to tell you that when I think about these things, and you know what my personality is like, and everybody here knows what my personality is like, you know, I feel like I want to, like I've got a volcano going on in myself, and like I want to explode. But then my doctors and other people are saying, Larry, you can't do that, because if you do that, they'll take you off to the hospital and they'll shoot you full of drugs until you calm down. Well, I either do that or I turn it in on myself and I end up being an absolute drag for everybody. You know,
yeah, but you're a very, very intelligent human being, Larry, and that means that you just have to learn to channel it differently. I know what a chore it is for you to write a letter. But if you're angry enough, you'll write a letter. Or if you are moved enough. And that, I would guess, is at least some sort of satisfaction that, knowing that you have reached out. I mean, you said something, a little bit ago that just sort of knocked me back in my chair. You said, you know, when I bathe, I have to have warm water and a lot of it. Well, how are people who have ability limitations like you have, who live in Kanawha County, coping with this?
A very good question.
How are our elders who are no longer able to bathe themselves dealing with this in a nursing home, or even in their own homes where they might have a family caregiver? See, this is, I mean, I said and said and said, and I say again, Ken Ward needs a damn Pulitzer out of this. Okay? But what we also need is 100 different journalists doing 100 different stories about this. You know, we need 10 column inches on how the disability community is, or the differently abled community is dealing with this. We need a full page worth of how mommies are dealing with this with infants in arms.
Yeah, how about the families with four or five kids?
Yeah. I mean, until the day I die, I'll refer to our children as the babies. Back when the babies were little, in a three bedroom house with one bathroom. Bath time had, and bless Agnes's heart, she managed it. Bath time had to have a sort of military precision to it. March in, march out.
Yep.
How do you handle that with a packet, you know, with a couple of packages of baby wipes and maybe a couple of gallons of fresh water that you've heated on the stove? I said a couple of weeks ago that people in this state are being asked to live the frontier lifestyles of their forebears for which they are not at all equipped. You know, Everybody makes a joke about, you know, the hillbillies, they take a bath once a week. Well, you know, some of the hillbillies took a bath once a month, or maybe the hillbillies quit bathing when the creek got too cold to get in it and didn't bathe again till it got warm enough. There's a reason for that. It's not like it's not because we're a bunch of, you know, filthy Scots-Irish who don't know how to bathe. It's because of the exigencies of the world in which we live.
Yeah, it's a practical response to an impossible situation. That's what it is. I mean, it's you have to respond to the circumstances in which you find yourself. And other people don't really understand it because they don't live in those circumstances themselves, or they used to, and they got out of it. So they figure, well, if we can get out of it, then everybody else can get out of it. It's not true.
I mean, I've already told this before, so I guess it's no big deal. It's nothing to be proud of, but, you know, back when the derecho came through 2 summers ago, a whole lot of electrical appliances got fried that we have not been able to replace. One of the things that got fried was the water heater. So, bathing here, and we do regularly, involves heating copious amounts of water on the stove and carrying it to the bathtub. Okay, this is how my family bathed in this house 80 years ago.
Have you ever thought about making a bucket shower, Bob?
No. No, I got a general idea of what those are, but you know, for purposes of this discussion, Sparky, I'm trying to convey the fact that, you know, this is difficult enough when the water is clean. If you're and at what point in time, since the DHHR and the DEP have been proven utterly, completely, totally incompetent and untrustworthy, at what point in time do you decide to finally believe them and just hope the water's okay? Because eventually that will kick in. You know, it's like it's like sailors after a ship sinks in a life raft. You're out there in the life raft long enough. Sooner or later, somebody's going to give up and drink salt water. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's likely to happen when it gets hot out.
And you asked what the disabled community's doing there, Bob. I guarantee you, living, knowing people in that community, they're probably already using that contaminated water. There are some people and places, like nursing homes, like you said, that I guarantee you are using that contaminated water. And did when the...
You know, Kevin, there are people in our community here in Berkeley. We've got a large community, but there are people that have been so beaten down by what they've had to deal with that I don't even see them out on the streets anymore having a good time, and they're basically just scared, and they've kind of decided to submit to whatever their reality is, and they're not fighting, and they either aren't fighting back, or they've just been burned out or beaten down.
I say that because that is one of the effects of disability, is that you don't have the resources everybody else does. And for, in particular, the severely disabled, if you're an activist and you can't get anybody to be activist with you, there's a part of you that says, screw it, I give up. And particularly with this water thing, for someone with limited means, not just disabled. When I say disabled, I'm not just talking about disabled. I'm talking poor and disabled, because there's a good amount of poor people that don't have the means to do what they should be doing too. They don't have the means to go out and buy 6 boxes of gallon 4 gallons of water in each box to get them through the week. So, if they don't have the means to do that, where are they going to get the water from? And, you know,
and that goes back to the $192,000.
Because I fell victim to it, and here in this city, being in the middle of Dobson Central, you know, it's hard to advocate sometimes. And one of the reasons it's hard to get any activists for the disabled here is because you just described it, Larry. They've been beaten down. And so how much more so for someone who's not only been beaten down, but who doesn't have the means to get clean water? And like Bob says, it's 2014. It wasn't that long ago in America where that's all we had to bathe with streams and rivers and water lakes and that. So if you lived in any state north of Georgia, you know, come winter, you probably weren't bathing too much. And of course, not bathing too much means disease and all the things that go with it. So I just wanted to add that because it...
No, I think it's a vital part of the conversation, Kevin. Consider this as we continue to talk about pipes and plumbing and stuff. You know, right now, it's cold here. Even when it gets to 50, it's still reasonably cold. And so when you turn on your cold water tap, you get cold water out. That will not always be so. When warm weather gets here, and assuming plumbing has not been replaced in the affected counties, that water will warm up to, you know, what, 70 degrees?
It'll be tepid.
Yeah. Now, what happens when the water in the cold water lines becomes tepid and maybe warm enough to activate what wasn't flushed, because it's impossible to flush this stuff?
Yep.
You guys talk about water. I would recommend there's an old book out there that, it must have been out in the 80s, late 70s, Cadillac Desert, where some of the western states were making very loud noises. About sticking the dipper into the Great Lakes. And that raised quite a fuss. I don't know if anybody's read it or not. It was a while ago when it came out.
Bill, that book, Mr. Stress, that book was assigned as a possible reading in a geography class that I was in.
Good.
In the late 80s. So,
yeah, late 80s.
I don't know if anybody else knows.
Had it laying around. If she left it in the right particular room, I'd pick it up and read it, you know. Because I wasn't too much in, I've never been in a, ecology took a long time to sink into a history hardhead, you know.
That's another harebrained scheme.
Yeah. Well, it's the old story. If these guys can figure out how to make a dollar out of it, they'll try anything once. That's my gospel.
Yeah. Well, you know, if they can figure out a way to monetize the air that we breathe, and I'm sorry to sound ridiculous, but it seems like it's the truth. If they can figure out a way to monetize the air that everybody breathes and the water in the ocean, they'll figure out a way to do it. I mean, they'll ration it and they'll use it to make profit off of it if they can.
Well, there was an old comment about everybody having to wear a mirror around your neck that showed how much you were breathing. They were charging you. It was a dollar for a gasp and 50 cents for an easy breath. You know, I mean, whoever laid the thing out, it was sickly humorous.
Kevin, what were you saying?
What?
The
Nestle chairman a while back said there's no reason people shouldn't pay for water. You know, so you're not that far off in saying, you know, that...
What do you, and Kevin, what he failed to say is there's no reason people shouldn't pay Nestle for water.
Right.
That's yeah. They're sneaky bastards, of course, but you know, anything we can come up with as far as these kinds of money making schemes, I'm sure has already been run through their, you know, the meat grinder of their think tanks. There's got to be a regular topic of discussion for these, you know, for these thugs. And
I hear you meant talking about Nestle.
Corporation selling them water is it's enough to put you off your lunch right there. That they get away with it is astounding.
Go ahead, Sparky.
We have a little town up here at the base of Mount Shasta called McLeod, California. They have the most purest water in the state that just comes right off the mountain. And Nestle wanted to build a bottled water plant right there in their little town because their mill shut down and everything, so there was no major employer there anymore. But the people of the town said, hell no. They were more concerned about their water, keeping rights to their own water, than giving it to a corporation.
And did it stay that way?
And they sacrificed all 8 jobs?
I don't know how many jobs bottled water plant produces, because I know us guys in my local wired one on the other side of the mountain for geysers, Crystal Geyser in Weed, California.
Well,
just saying that it was a success story. They beat Nestle.
Yeah.
Well, I often wonder when I see bottled water, is it it's direct from such and such, yeah, or is it direct from the print shop on the label? Because who the hell goes, you know, how many of us can actually test the stuff to see what the hell is in it?
Oh, well, I mean, there are object lessons there, because they love, you're absolutely right, Bill. They love to market things like, you know, from the pure and pristine stream, Fiji water, okay? Yeah, I can't even stand to set my hand upon a bottle of that stuff, because I think of all the diesel fuel, or, you know, whatever, because they're not sending it over by clipper ship on wind power that goes into that. But if you look into it, yeah, that's a sleazy business, because within a very short distance of where Fiji water is produced, there are poverty villages who do not have clean drinking water.
Wow.
Because Fiji water is there.
Advertising, you know, can sell anything.
I mean, I get creeped out when I see, I've seen bottled water from Norway. I've seen bottled water from Iceland. And of course, you know, the two old standards are Pellegrino and Perrier. And what they want in your mind is this picture of, you know, some little Frenchman with a pencil thin mustache and a beret sticking a bottle in a spring and saying, "Hey, Pierre, I have another one. Put it in the case." That ain't it. These are freaking industries.
It's marketing the sizzle, not the steak.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Let's see, Paris for a very long time was they had a corporate water provider named, I think, Vivendi.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even the Parisians grew tired of that and began backing away from it. I think Vivendi, and maybe I'm mistaken, if anybody wants to fact check me, I think Vivendi had a contract for providing the water to the city of Atlanta. And they were so god awful at providing municipal water services that they just backed out. Atlanta said, "Screw you, we'll take it, but we'll do it ourselves."
And didn't the people of La Paz, Bolivia, also rebel against some scheme of the same sort, where their water quadrupled in cost, and they made such an outrage that the city fathers, or whomever you'd want to call them, took it back and made it a municipal system again.
Yeah. And frankly, that should that should happen. That should happen. Well, West Virginia. Well, American water should cease to exist.
That's right. It's all part of the commons.
Yeah. And you know, shareholder profits have no place in essential in the essentials of human life.
Right.
You know, Bob, I've been on European trains in which they will have a sign. I remember this in France. It says non potable.
Yeah. Don't drink the water.
Exactly. And these are drinking fountains on the train. And they'll put a sign right up there. I've seen it.
Hey, by the way, since there's a little break in the action, I wanted to take a moment to thank Jug of Punch. Between Jug of Punch and Henry, we have managed to cut down the deficit for this week to $230. So, 23 folks, $10 apiece. We can finish the week out here in about 45 minutes if that can happen. Thank you very much, Jug of Punch and Henry. Jack in Shreveport gives you an amen, Kevin. He says, I agree, the sickness coming from the Nestle Corporation is just astounding. And Marty has a question. He says, which one was the country that privatized their entire water system and sold the rights to Bechtel, and the terms were so onerous that citizens couldn't even catch rainwater for their use? Sounds like Bechtel.
In South America?
It sounds like Latin America somewhere.
And by the way, just for anybody wondering, not too far away from here, there's a Boy Scout camp. And they have thousands and thousands and thousands of scouts in for their jamboree. And it's anybody care to know the name of the Boy Scout camp?
Blackwater?
No, it's the Summit Bechtel Boy Scout Camp.
Oh, I'm just kidding. Yeah, right.
And by the way, the water supply, or at least part of the water supply, or the way it was planned, there's a public service district called Kincaid Page, P-A-G-E, little communities in Fayette County. And there is a mountaintop removal operation that looms right over top of the water supply for the Page Kincaid Public Service District. So, I guess part of this is to point out that anybody paying attention in this state, in Central Appalachia generally, should realize that these corporations don't give a good goddamn about potable water. The people have been getting poisoned for years. The most notable thing that I can come up with is the printer water supply, P-R-E-N-T-E-R, that got poisoned. And the only way that the folks in Printer for a very long time had fresh water is because, you know, those hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch that I mention every night, they trucked water. They obtained potable water barrels and trucked water to homes in Printer, West Virginia, constantly. They ran their own freshwater Berlin airlift on the back of a pickup truck to Printer, West Virginia, so that they could have clean drinking water. And it went on for a couple of years until they finally put in a public drinking water supply operated by West Virginia American Water, and then, lo and behold, their water got poisoned again. And by the way, there was a cancer cluster in Printer of, I think, six homes in which one person in every home had a form of brain cancer that occurs only once in the population at 1 in 100,000. And they weren't even related by blood. All they had was the common interest of their water and their air. Oh, by the way, answer coming in from Ron and Raleigh. The water system was purchased by the Bechtel Group. You couldn't even collect rainwater. Perrier had a benzene problem, but the Bechtel problem was Cochabamba, which sounds like Bolivia.
in this day and age, back in the mid-80s, when I moved to Lake County, there was a stream or a little place that would put out water. And come August, the water in the out of Painesville, out of the plant, would smell bad. And all my ex and I used to go out and fill water bottles at this natural spring. And what year was that? I mean, come on.
And in all of this, I keep thinking back to my friends in northern Wisconsin. There's a little coffee shop there called the Black Cat, and I've been there a couple of times. They make a lovely cup of coffee, but they've also always got drinking water there for you. And the drinking water they have at the Black Cat comes from an artesian well not too far away, where cold, crystal clear, perfect water just bubbles up out of the ground, and it's wonderful. I mean, it's like something from Greek mythology. It's like drinking from Hippocrene. And of course, they're under threat. There's a former coal company that wants to be an iron ore company that wants to destroy that. And why should they be allowed to? By the way, thanks to Jan and Jerry and Greg and Dan. Between them, they have taken down the deficit significantly. We are down to, wait a second here, where was I? Talk amongst yourselves. I got to do the math. I got lost.
My honor, Bob.
Oh, thank you, Dan. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
We're actually, no, there, oh, wow, that's pretty cool. We're down to $90 to go. We're down to $90 to go to finish out January to the good, so thanks very much to all of you. I didn't mean to let the water issue dominate the conversation. I haven't this whole time. It seems like that's all I've talked about for 3 weeks. But, if there's other stuff, but what else is there but water, right? What are the people in Wyoming going to do when those rotten bastards set fire to the underground coal? I had a note from Robert in Australia who said, "Sorry about Link Energy." It was Link Energy's, was it not? It was Link Energy. Robert's in Australia. He says, "Greed has no borders, obviously. I'm surprised they weren't allowed to set some underground coal fields here in Australia on fire, considering the current federal government." The current Prime Minister, Tony Abbott, said back in 2009, "Global warming is crap," his very words, "and they're currently turning a world-standard fiber-optic high-speed internet into two tin cans with a string because it's cheaper. So setting a coal field on fire shouldn't have been an issue for them. As to water, Australia has always suffered from droughts. After World War II, the government of New South Wales knew the post-war population here in Sydney would grow and that demand for water would increase, so they built a dam to supply Sydney's water into the future. A few years ago, the water levels in the dam started to fall below what was considered safe, so the New South Wales government built a desalination plant at Botany Bay. A lot of people objected, but long-term, it's been a good investment." And, well, the ongoing story of the Murray River Basin in Australia is deeply disturbing. And it just, well, you're going to, more and more we're going to have these things, but the problem is, will they be public or private? And for instance, the company, this Link Energy outfit, they quit their Australian plan, I assume, because they were getting grief from the previous government. Who knows? If this thing comes off, they may light some underground coal on fire in Australia yet, Robert. So it might be a good idea to get ready to, get active. It was the weirdest thing,
They want to ignite the coal subterraneously to create a gas fuel.
Yes.
Is this right?
Yes. What they are calling artificial natural gas?
Yeah.
And if that doesn't make your head spin... Synthetic natural gas. That was what it was.
which is basically artificial natural gas. It's just another name.
Right, at which point in time, I think you have to take the word natural out of it. Unless you're going to add another name and call it synthetic, I don't know. Let's do a little brainstorming here. Synthetic natural Orwell gas.
And by the way, good evening, everyone. I don't think I've spoken yet.
Yeah, hey, Sergi. What's happening?
Oh, nothing much. It was 75 here today. I enjoyed that 75 because we are going to be sent into the freeze box again tomorrow.
Oh, is there going to be? We're anticipating 55 here tomorrow, Sergi, and at least halfway decent skies. So I'm kind of stoked.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's going to, like, the next week or so, highs mainly in the 40s and 50s and lows in the 20s and 30s, which to me is freezing cold. So that's the reason I say into the freeze box. And Sunday is iffy. I am hoping that the snow and ice stays northwest of the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. I do not want to see another snowflake or sleet pellet. I just want the rain.
Well, but I mean, but as between snow and ice, you'll take the snow, right?
Oh yeah, because at least snow has traction. that ice, I was slipping and sliding.
Yeah, and see, let's make something clear for everybody who had a good giggle at the expense of people in Atlanta. You can't drive on ice. I don't care. You can't unless you've got tank tracks. You cannot drive on ice.
Correct. The mundo.
And
you can't even walk on ice.
Yeah, I mean we had a good sized snowfall. Well, I mean, you know, we got caught in a whiteout over in Beckley. Ferg and I did on Saturday evening, and the snow was so profound and so quickly piling up, quickly accumulating, that you couldn't see lines on the road. But we've got enough government left that we did get the trucks out, and there was, you know, if you put sand down on snow, the two will kind of aggregate even if it's cold, and it makes it kind of grippy. But you can't do a damn thing about ice except put the blade down on the ground and start scraping, and I'm guessing neither Dallas nor Atlanta has snow plows.
We actually do have snow plows, and I was actually just about to mention, because you were saying snow versus ice, back in February of 2011 is the biggest winter storm I personally have ever witnessed, because it rained, then all that rain froze, literally, because it dropped from 35 to 15 in about 20 minutes, so that what was on the ground, about an inch of rain froze solid. But then, on top of that, it snowed wet, Southern style
slop.
Wet, gloppy snow.
Slop.
But then what happened? We got another, it was a third cold front, and an upper level was slammed into the air mass behind that cold front. That was the first time in my life I've ever, because on the wet snow settled, and then on top of that, fluffy Northern style snow fell because it was 15 degrees, so it was cold enough for that northern style to fall. That's the first time and the only time so far in my life I've seen that. And I noticed something. I went outside prepared to slip and slide, and I walk around almost like it's normal, and that stuff, it has traction. I even was able to ride a bike on it. It's like it was really a sight to behold for me. You know, it's first of all, I'm glad we have some kind of precipitation in the forecast. I mean, our drought isn't as bad as California's, but we're parched down here as well. Reservoirs draining, water restrictions, so on and so forth. So I'm just glad there's supposed to rain Saturday. Sunday's that iffy day. Whether it'll be rain or snow or a mix of rain and snow is still up in the air. Then Monday and Tuesday, regular rain. And I'm just glad to see that. You know, we'll take a good soaker, and I don't mind even a few snowflakes. Just please don't stick.
I don't think we're out of the woods by any stretch of the imagination here. I think, yeah, my little weather widget, which I don't know whether it's been pretty close on lately.
What's your elevation there, Bob?
We are about 1,600 feet.
Okay.
But you know, just 5 miles up the road, it's getting a lot closer to 2,000. But we're supposed to get snow on Monday, and then rain on Tuesday, and then snow on Wednesday. But that looks like the stuff where it comes down and then it melts. I mean, we had a lot of snow on the ground, and just in this one day of warm weather, the vast majority of it's gone today.
You're looking at the next couple of days in high 30s here in Syracuse with a wintry mix, which means maybe some rain, maybe some snow, maybe a mixture. A little bit south of here toward the coast, I'd imagine that the big game will have temperatures in the high 30s, probably dropping through the evening. And whether they get any precipitation or not, I don't know. But I happen to be one of those folks that I'm looking forward to a northern game outside. Football's an outside game, and there's no reason why a dome team like the Saints ought to have it their way all the time. So I'm looking forward to this contest.
And I want to say that
I agree with Sandra's her naming Peyton Manning Herman Munster. I thought that was hilarious.
I giggled too.
Jeez, it rivals Jim's Count Dicula. you know, which I always.
I'm looking forward to the.
Say again, Sergey.
Santa, I'm not concerned with any of that. I'm looking forward to the Puppy Bowl. I'm going to be on Animal Planet.
Are you?
I thought it was the Kitten Bowl.
Cute.
What's the Puppy Bowl?
No, the cats do the halftime performance.
Actually,
piano playing cat will do the halftime performance at the Puppy Bowl.
Yeah, it's kids, kittens during halftime, and puppies the rest. Although now, I think it's a new thing this year. Maybe it's something that's happened in the past, and nobody noticed. But the Hallmark Channel is actually doing a Kitten Bowl.
Okay, that's where I saw it. Yeah.
And, it's Animal Planet says, I wonder if they're going to have dogs during their halftime. Who knows? But, one more thing about the topic of weather. I'm not sure if I've mentioned this before, but I am a, trained and certified skywarn storm spotter, and I'm also trained and certified to chase if I choose to. And I attended this year's seminar just actually a week ago. And so, like, if anyone's interested in learning more about severe thunderstorms, I recorded the whole thing. I'm going to be putting it up on YouTube.
Oh, cool.
So just in case, because I mean, you know, even if weather's not a hobby for you, it still helps to know how thunderstorms work so you can stay safe with them.
Yeah, I'll vouch for Sergey's depth of knowledge on the subject.
So will I.
Well, thank you.
Making me look up our 10-day forecast. It's going to be another week before we get any rain again.
What's the chance of rain at the end of the week?
Oh, they're saying 100% next weekend.
100
this weekend.
Here's hoping it is 100%.
But again, to go back, what we were talking about, you don't need. But I mean, is that just you guys, Sparky, or is that up on the mountain?
That's just me right here where I'm sitting.
So what does that mean? What does that mean for accumulation on the mountain?
Well, there are stuff that accumulates on the mountain. It doesn't hit us, but most of the time the storms will cover the whole range. If you look at that link I posted in the Skype group, I mean I posted it in the Horn Chat too. It shows you a picture of California and all the rivers and flows and how they go, The only thing, they don't have anything north of Shasta Lake. They don't show you what flows into Shasta Lake. But that's basically the water flow system from out of the mountains, and then all those little bigger ends, that little trunk lines on all the rivers are dams. And then that, and it all flows down into the bay, of course. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a strange map, but I'm right where Payne's Creek and Antelope Creek and Mill Creek, which is the area where Ishii lived.
Oh, is it really?
I mean, yeah.
Let me sneak in one thing about the salt everybody talks about. Downtown Cleveland, less than a half a mile from the stadium where the Browns lose continues, salt mine. I've been in it delivering some stuff one time, and you keep wondering, when is this going to collapse? When you're digging out like that under the lake. Of course, Bob, you would probably feel that way too. These salt mines these aren't little small tunnels. They're driving.
Oh, and they are way the hell underground sometimes.
My God, the biggest federal depository in Pennsylvania is, for records and stuff, was made out of a salt mine. It's in Boyers. You ever seen that complex under there?
No.
It's absolutely huge. That's where they keep all federal records, at least for this part of the country.
And I saw an article the other night about an attempt to contain, and I hope I'm not saying this wrong, or describing it wrongly, but if I read it correctly, it was an attempt to store frack gas in an old salt mine, which then collapsed.
That won't work.
Well, apparently they found that out, Jim.
Anyone with a speck of common sense would realize that would end in disaster.
But common sense doesn't come first, Sergi. The relentless, remorseless, and apparently intellectless drive for runaway profit comes first.
Unfortunately.
Up here in the upper Sacramento Valley, we've got a lot of old gas wells. So several years back, they put a facility in. It's called the Lone Goose Gas Storage Project, where they pump the gas into old gas wells in the night and then took it out during the day. And then after that project was done a few years later, I worked on a gas power plant just south of there that Bechtel built. So they were using the gas from that gas storage facility. But it's been done. They store gas.
What was Bechtel's original name before it became Bechtel? Was it Bethlehem Steel, or am I totally off the wall there?
I don't think so. Bechtel's based in San Francisco.
According to Wikipedia, Jim, no, it's always been Bechtel.
All right.
It's the largest construction and engineering company in the U.S., the fifth largest privately owned company in the U.S.,
right.
Family-owned, founded by Warren A. Bechtel.
Okay, thank you.
And he started out as a railroad industry employee after he failed at cattle ranching in Oklahoma.
Well, wasn't that the outfit that built the showers in Iraq that wound up electrocuting?
No, that was
Halliburton.
Was that Halliburton?
No, that was KBR, Kellogg Brown and Root. KBR?
Yeah, which is owned
the nastiest freaking company. From the
weren't they known during the Vietnam era as Kellogg Burn and Loot?
It could have been
any relation to Kellogg's.
I didn't even know them back then.
To the extent that Kellogg was out of Michigan, it would have to be, it would kind of have to be distant, Sergi, simply because KBR came to its prominence by being patronized by then Senator Lyndon Baines Johnson.
Well,
yeah. As I can remember, I hear the name Kellogg, I think of the cereal.
Well, and you know what? There's something else to think of when you hear about Kellogg. I don't know how many people know about this, but they are involved in a nasty, nasty, nasty bit of anti-union, well, union busting. What? Conduct. And it's been going. It's been going on for a while. There's a lockout that has entered its fourth month now, with a primarily, I think it's primarily minority members, minority workers, and they're, you know, it's just nasty. And it's taking place in or around Memphis, Tennessee. They've thrown 220 people, locked them out from their jobs.
Greg from Malloy Chats reminded me, Bechtel, George Shultz was the CEO. He had a sister who worked there for years.
Yeah, George Shultz was the CEO. And for some reason or another, the eye bleach won't make it go away. That somewhere during the Reagan tenure, those long nightmare years, it became known that he had a Princeton Tiger tattooed on his ass.
Bob, what's the thing I hear about him being naked somewhere?
Oh Lord, I don't know, Jim.
I heard something about that where he was. Cavorting around in the buff somewhere.
Well, that's probably how people found out about the damn tattoo.
Well, that's what I was thinking.
Just to get back to the Kellogg story, because it actually matters. 220 people locked out of the Memphis Kellogg's plant, and it's over a contract dispute because the company wants to bring in more of what they call casual employees, to actually run the production lines for the Frosted Flakes.
Oh, they are such a devil's lightly, aren't they?
Oh, they are. Casual employees. Yeah, well, I guess I'll go make some cornflakes this morning.
Mm-hmm, I'll spit them, too.
Two-tier wage, flexible schedule. We'll call you when we need you.
Yeah, exactly. And according to this commercial appeal story, the lockout started one day after their union filed unfair labor practice charges, alleging failure to bargain in good faith.
The lockout has been one of the tools that corporations use now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Did Cooper Tire settle with their workers?
No. I don't know. Let's find out.
One thing about Bechtel, when it builds a project and it's all union, they use a project labor agreement that they help write.
Yeah. Well, I mean, those things are immensely valuable because they cover a broad spectrum, do they not?
Yes, they do, but all the trades have to. It's one labor agreement. All the trades can't use their labor agreement against the employer once they sign on to the project labor agreement and the employer signs on to it.
Oh, I'm looking here now. Apparently, the Cooper Tire strike was occasioned by an attempt by Cooper to merge with a Chinese business partner.
I think I did hear that.
And they turned down the offer. But if they've got a Chinese plant, then how is it that Cooper is billed as still made in the USA.
Well, actually, this is a thing I heard a few years ago. Now, I can't say that I've ever verified its veracity. However, it seems quite plausible and quite realistic that this is a thing. And I heard this a few years ago on the radio, that there is a city in China named USA for the specific purpose of factories being built there still claiming they can say, like, made in USA. Not made in the United States of America, but made in USA.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God, sir. Cue Jim again. They are such devils with language.
I mean, like I said, I heard this on the radio a few years ago. I haven't verified this veracity, but it sure does seem plausible that a lot of products that you see made in USA, yeah, there probably is a city in China named USA.
Yeah, and it's probably populated by prisoners.
Yeah.
Well, being an old fart, I'd heard that story about Japan 35 years ago, 30 years ago. The same thing to use the story.
I'll be darned. Oh, by the way, an update on Link Energy, the people who want to set fire to the coal underneath Wyoming. Robert, up in Australia, we're refusing to be direction-centric here. Robert up in Australia says, I had a quick look at the Link Energy website. Just another dead-end hydrocarbon company desperate to squeeze every last bit of oil and gas that they can out of the ground before it's all gone, regardless of the damage they do. Their motto is, fueling our future. And it's the usual story. Link Energy works with its operational and site teams to build lasting relationships with its landowners and local communities to develop mutual and balanced outcomes. They have major holdings in South Australia, which is having its second extended heat wave this year. Is that irony? While they are an Australian company, Robert says, I'd like to know who actually owns and controls them. Very few Australian companies are actually fully Australian-owned and operated anymore. Well, I wouldn't be surprised if they were in bed with... Well, Peabody Energy does a boatload of work over in Australia.
Well, Bob, maybe it's the Thorn Corporation, the one that was mentioned in the Omen.
At this point in time, starting an underground fire, it kind of fits, doesn't it, Jim?
Well, that's what I was thinking.
God in heaven.
And Jim, you're coming through faint. Did you say the Omen?
Yeah, remember the Thorn Corporation that had all the food plantations in India where they were trying to do all this stuff there with them and how they were going to use food as a weapon. And, of course, you know, in the Omen, the people who were against it sort of got done in by the Friends of Damien or whomever it was, son of the Antichrist or the Antichrist himself, yeah. The little boy that had sixes on his scalp. But the Thorn Corporation was his access to world power.
Okay. That was a great movie.
Actually, they had three of them, I think, didn't they?
The first one was the real gem, I always thought. And I don't go in for horror movies, but that didn't strike me as a horror movie so much as a suspense thriller kind of thing. Speaking of a TV or media update, last Friday, I had a recommendation from both Ron and Raleigh and Tracy, the lady cab driver, to go forth and begin watching Justified. On the strength of that recommendation, I did, because they both have very good taste. And I can report back that it's damn fun watching.
Hmm.
And it's all available for, you know, online viewing on... Oh, God, I wish they'd pay me for saying this shit. All available for online viewing on Amazon Prime, which is decidedly less expensive than Netflix. But I've been enjoying the heck out of it. first episode starts off dealing with a hillbilly Klansman, and it just gets better after that. The acting's good, the casting's good, the dialogue is just wonderful. As Ron and Raleigh noted, it's based on Elmore Leonard's stuff, so you can't get much better than that. And I have now seen the first two installments of this season of Sherlock, and I'm absolutely captivated. The second installment was, wow, just tremendous.
Was that PBS?
Yeah.
Justified on Couch Dinner also.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, which reminds me,
Ferg. Five seasons.
Ferg and I have some Teen Wolf watching to do. I think if I just stab myself in the neck with the Thorazine dart, I'll be able to get through it.
Oh, just get some wolf bane. That'll take care of it, Bob.
Oh, by the way, a note coming in for you, Jim, from Ron and Raleigh. George Shultz and others were said to have cavorted nude at the Bohemian Grove.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Ron. I didn't want to be reminded of that, but I just wonder what...
Well, but what the hell else is it worth stockpiling the eye bleach for, Jim?
Well, that's Hildebrand. True. Absolutely. God almighty, I can't imagine. Oh, God. Listen,
that's not far from where you were when you came into California.
Oh, really?
Hmm.
Yeah, it's up just north of Mill Valley and everywhere, somewhere up in there.
Well, you know, that's a nice enough place that, I don't know, with enough cheap tequila, who knows who might get naked and run around in the woods. But I do not have a Princeton Tiger tattooed on my ass, so.
Is that place that was publicized where all these important people could go, and it was sort of like a private compound?
Oh yeah, yes. Yeah. And the out there fringe. Well, I don't want to characterize it that way, but there are all kinds of allegations of, you know, virgin sacrifices and
they have guards around there to prevent any type of intrusion.
I'll bet.
Yes.
I thought Doesn't Alex like to talk about that?
Dunk, wasn't it over by Occidental in Sonoma County or somewhere in the woods? I don't know exactly.
Yeah, it's somewhere right over there, somewhere. It's not very far from where Bob was. I'm not exactly sure exactly.
Maybe that's why I had that compelling urge just to start removing clothing, but no.
I think it's in more rural than Marin County. I think it's a little north in Sonoma County. That's where I think it is. Nobody, I don't know at all, but that's where I think it is.
Well, just as long as Candy Crowley doesn't go there.
And I was going to say about Kellogg, although this is not germane to the conversation about Kellogg, but originally I think Kellogg started because they wanted to, and there was this breakfast fad or this belief that it was healthier to eat cornflakes than it was to eat the original American breakfast. So they had this health movement started by that Kellogg's Corporation.
Oh, yeah, there's a movie out there, The Road to Wellville?
Yep.
Was that the one? The whole movement behind breakfast cereals was sort of a back to nature kind of holistic medicine, et cetera, yada, yada, yada. You're absolutely right, Larry.
Straight from Battle Creek.
Wasn't that a quackery factory resort of the early 1900s?
Yeah, I think it was near Battle Creek, wasn't it?
That's exactly where it was from.
And Battle Creek, of course, has an entire history of its own.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have reached. I love Friday on the Front Porch because these conversations go all over the place and they end entirely too soon. But I have had a wonderful time, and I want to thank each and every one of you for chiming in, and thanks for all the emails. And, you know, thanks for being patient with me while I continue to freak out over this water disaster. I try really hard to be kind of calm and cool and collected. But when you sit there and you read everything you can get your eyeballs on, and you keep seeing stuff not being mentioned that feels like it's somehow relevant, it's hard not to mention it. And you know, from out, Shorty in L.A. sent me the article about Dr. Simonton talking about the formaldehyde, and of course then the Dr. Letitia, what's her name, came out and said, well, you know, we don't like him. He's not on our Christmas card list. How dare he? He didn't tell us he was going to do this. Jesus.
Well.
But there's so much to be done, and so much to be concerned about. But I also want to thank all of y'all, and I want to thank everybody who helped us. Yes, we did defeat the deficit this evening, and finish January to the good. We actually did that. Thanks to Henry, and thanks to Jug of Punch, and thanks to Greg and Jan and Dan and Sal and Gary and Jenny and Jack. We actually got out of the hole, so we will start February in good stead. Thank you all very much. It's the only way. I keep saying it, but it's the absolute truth. It's the only way that this keeps going. And I don't think I would be any good at online exorcisms. I could try, but, you know, I don't know if there's a market. Capitalism being capitalism, I'm willing to undercut that SOB from Arizona. He gets $265 for an exorcism. By God, I'll do one for 45 minutes for $150.
Well, just beware of those steps that go down to M Street. Now.
I understand. You know, if you're in that neighborhood, you just keep walking, don't you?
Sure do.
But y'all have a wonderful weekend. A reminder for anybody who wants to continue on, Sparky, the group will continue post Malloy this evening.
It does every Friday night.
Absolutely. So jump right in if you've never tried it. If you want to jump into the Skype group, send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, and you will be welcome in the conversation. Thanks, everybody. Good night, Bill.
Good night.
And good night, Kevin. And good night, Jim, and good night, Dan. Thank you all so very much.
Good night, Bob.
And to the Skype group, also, a hearty good night. Duncan, of course, thank you for everything you do.
No problem, Bob.
Thanks for your participation this evening, Larry. It's always an engaging conversation. Waggy, thanks for validating some of my unscientifically founded English major-driven concerns. It's great having smart people to have a conversation with. It truly is.
You're always welcome, Mr. Kincaid.
And thank you, Sergi, for joining in and providing input on what will probably swing in a broad arc northward my way with the way my luck runs. Thank you all
thank
very
you,
much.
Bob.
Y'all have a good evening. Maybe we'll be talking post-midnight. I don't know. I don't like to make a big deal out of it, but I think I'm going to go somewhere and crack open something cold and malty. It's my birthday, so y'all take care.
Happy birthday, Bob.
Thanks, Sparky.
Happy birthday, Bob.
Thank you all very much.
Oh, Bob, I didn't know it was your birthday. Happy birthday.
Well, thank you. No, nobody did. I didn't make a big deal out of it, but
I knew.
Oh, okay.
I saw it on your Facebook page.
Yeah, there was, but yeah. So, yeah, what do you do? What do you do at 51?
At what?
At 51. I mean, is that rock, paper, scissors, diamonds?
I turned 51.
Okay.
A year older.
Yeah, exactly. All right, guys. Have a good evening.
I'm glad you're here, Bob. I'm glad you're with us.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you very much. And thanks go out always to, like I said, to all of you who make all of this go and our all-volunteer staff, including Sparky and Lottie and Texas Betsy in the chat room and our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. And thank you to John Fox and Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT.org, ACHECT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. And here
comes Rick Smith on the horn.